Welcome to Terrible People Doing Terrible Things.
I'm Laura, a psychology and horror addict who loves talking about terrible things.
And I'm Amanda, a licensed psychologist who enjoys studying the worst of humanity. We're going to talk a little bit about cults, and I'm specifically going to cover a cult known as the Ant Hill Kids.
Okay, got it.
You know, I was thinking about how we would both be if we were cult leaders, kind of how that would look. And did you have any thoughts, like, for yourself of how that would go?
So I've looked up a lot about cults and everything like that.
Yeah.
Usually you have to have some kind of religious-based thing going on, and that's how you... And you prey upon, like, you know, people who
unsuspecting victims.
Generally, yeah, people who, you know, don't have maybe the awareness or are emotionally, you know, disturbed or whatever their reason is for, you know, they've been shunned by society and they need a place to fit in.
Yeah.
So I would set up my cult as, like, a band of misfits.
Nice. Nice.
And then, I wouldn't want to kill anybody.
Okay.
So we can't go the Charles Manson.
Murder wouldn't be on your list?
No. No, because that's how you get, like, super, super arrested.
What about having, forcing your members or commanding them they have to have sex with you only?
No, like no, I'm good. No, thank you. There will be no sex required in my cult. You can if you want to.
Yeah.
Anybody, anyway, as long as you're not harming. That's what my cult would be. My cult is love everybody as long as it's not hurting anyone else. You're good.
Okay.
So, like, everybody can join, you know, the gays, everybody. Like, fuck all other kinds of religions. There's no religious based. It's just, you know, hey, we love everybody. And then I think we would all smoke pot a lot.
Okay.
All the time.
Yeah.
And maybe make, like, a commune. I feel like I would have a commune, but it would be a commune of gardening and smoking pot. And there would be a lot of pools.
Well, I was thinking about how I would be as a cult leader. And I was thinking kind of from a standpoint of, like, how I would be as a parent, too, I guess. Because you're, like, a parent figure for these people.
Yeah. To a shitload of people.
And I think I'd be kind of like you, where I'd be, like, super laid back and chill and probably wouldn't have a lot of rules. I'd probably even be this really lazy cult leader that's just like, yeah, you guys could have friends over. And
you figure it out.
Pizza for dinner? Pizza again? No? Okay, taco bar? Taco bar? Okay, perfect.
So yeah, you're running a cult of, like, teenagers that you're taking care of. You're like, you guys want some pizza rolls? I've got pizza rolls.
I got the pizza rolls, Hot Pockets. Anyone need a Hot Pocket? Basically a giant pizza roll.
So you're the mom of the cult. Yay.
I'd be the mom figure, and I would be all over them if I was worried about them doing something illegal. I'd be like,
are you going to make them have sex with only you?
No, I don't think I'd be into that either. I'd make them, what would I make them do? I don't even know if I'd make them do anything.
See,
I think I'd be
terrible cult leaders.
Yeah, I don't think I'm cut out for this whole cult leader thing. I don't even want to be, like, in a managerial position in the first place.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, man, fuck that. I don't want to be responsible for a bunch of people. I don't, like, I've been on the fence about having children for years. Like, not even multiple children, just the fucking one. Just one child. So having, you know, 500 adults be like, what next, Messiah?
Is what do, like, we do, Lord?
I'd be like, oh, fuck, just go, make your own decisions. Leave me alone.
Like, I don't fucking know. I don't know what the hell's going on.
What do I look like to you, God? Yeah.
Yes, that's why we joined.
Well, then, right there, I feel like our cults would fall apart as soon as they started.
Or it would work really well, but we just would not accomplish anything.
Yeah, there's no charitable anything being done. It's just
community gardens
chilling.
Would be dying. We wouldn't, any of our businesses wouldn't do
because everyone's high all the time. And they're just like, I feel like it's
I didn't want to. And I'd be like, oh, okay, that's fine, I guess.
I'd just make a cult. It would be a cult of people eating Cheetos, watching TV, smoking pot.
The Cheetos cult.
Yeah, the Cheetos pot cult.
I mean, I would join that. I would be
I would just have a giant mansion where people just sat around and didn't do anything.
Well, so, unfortunately, that's not how cults go, typically.
No.
When we've heard about them. And I'm going to talk about a group known as the Ant Hill Kids. Have you heard about them?
No, I've never heard of that one. I mean, I'm pretty you know, pretty into, I wouldn't say into cults. I'm into reading about cults.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, and the whole, you know, mob mentality and all that shit. But, no, I've never heard of this one, or at least not, I don't know the title. You know what okay, I mean? Yeah. Maybe I've heard a detail or something, but no, I don't
know
about this.
The whole thing isn't like ringing a bell. Mm-mm. Well, so I think it is kind of a lesser known cult for whatever reason, because there's some shit that's going to go down, and I'll talk about that as we get into it.
Okay.
But so the Ant Hill Kids was a doomsday cult based in Canada that operated between 1977 and 1989.
Oh, interesting. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay.
Fucking prime time for cults. And it actually lasted,
hey, that,
you know, 12 years.
That cult ended the year I was born. 1989, baby.
I was six, so I could have joined, I guess. I could have been like a little child member.
Your parents could have been in it, you know.
Oh, God. That would have been
right?
so
Think
awkward.
Think about that. That, like, who, somebody alive today who's your age probably had a parent or something that was, maybe.
Was
I don't know the details about this cult. It might not have ended that way, but, you know, there could be.
There actually could be.
Okay.
So it was led by a man named Roche Terrio.
Roche,
I don't know. It's
okay.
Like they're all, but when I looked at pronunciations, everyone was like Terrio.
Okay,
I'm like,
so it's
okay.
French.
So that's French, yep. But that sounds very American when we're trying to pronounce it.
Okay.
So his teachings were in part based on the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Okay.
And like many cults, you know, this group was believed to be a pretty typical free-thinking group of young men and women who were living together in a commune in the Canadian wilderness.
Okay, so like what I wanted, you know, just chilling.
People hanging out in the trees. Over time, though, like most of these things, it would become all too clear that the community was suffering at the hands of their leader.
Okay. Yeah, that's usually how this comes out. It's like, no, it's just like a nice, free, fun-living thing where we're going to...
We're just
and then,
hanging
and
out
then all of a sudden
and
it's
like
not
making
anymore.
Hemp bracelets. Yeah, exactly. So let's start at the beginning with this one.
Right.
Roche was born on May 16th, 1947, mm-hmm. in Rivière-du-Moulin, Quebec.
Okay.
His father, Hyacinthe Terrio, was a painter, while his mother, Pierrette, was a homemaker. Roche was one of seven siblings, and he was the eldest son of the family. I think he was the second oldest, but he was the eldest son. So there's...
Okay, got you. So he had like two older sisters or something, or an older sister.
Yes. Yeah. One older sister, and then...
I'm sorry, I'm bad at math.
Six siblings. So there are claims that the atmosphere in the family's home was abusive during Roche's childhood.
Makes sense.
And neighbors would come forward many years after the fact to report this concern, and then Roche himself stated that his father was physically abusive towards him for the entirety of his childhood.
I love how these people come out, like, years later.
Yes.
Like, God damn it, that's not how this works, motherfuckers.
Yeah, they're going to have aged out of the system by then and won't be able to get any help.
Could you please just say something when you see it happening? Thank you.
Great, I'm having the shit beat out of me on a daily basis, but, you know, I'm fine.
I'd be pretty mad if I was, like, abused and then later on my neighbors were like, oh, yeah, we could tell. I'd be like, fuck
yeah,
you.
We knew something fucked up was going on.
You bastards.
These allegations were, of course, denied by his father.
Well, duh.
And then there's an article published in Maclean's on February 8th, 1993, that's pretty simply titled just The Ant Hill Kids. And it includes a statement from a longtime neighbor of Terrio, of the Terrio family, about witnessing questionable behaviors in the home.
Okay.
The neighbor, Leon Vichot, described a common game that Roche, his father, and his brothers would play named Bone. And he described it as follows. And so this is a quote from the neighbor.
Oh, God.
They would sit at the kitchen table with their heavy boots on and kick each other's shins until one of them gave in.
You know, okay, now let's be honest. You know, there was a game called Knuckles when I was a kid.
Oh, that's right.
Right, where you would put all of your knuckles down on the table and then your friends would flick quarters very hard at your knuckles.
Yes.
And you lost if you gave up. And I have quite a few friends who have scars on their knuckles from sitting.
God.
So it's not unusual, but for the father to be
playing for the father
the game,
to take part, yes.
Because, like, my parents never would have flipped it. They would have been like, are you stupid? What game? This is the game you're playing at school?
I'm like, I knew I shouldn't have had kids. Well, so the neighbor also goes on to explain how the mother, she seems like she was kind of a piece of work as well, because
mm-hmm.
she was constantly screaming at the children.
Mm, okay. But, that's never a good upbringing.
Yeah, so dad is not supportive and pretty abusive, and then mom has her own shit she's dealing with.
Now, you said that it was an article called The Ant Hill Kids. Is there a reason for that name?
I will cover that. Cool. Yeah, as we go on, I'll kind of give you guys an insight into where the hell that name came from.
Okay. I was like, is that something I'm supposed to know?
Yes, it doesn't at all just make sense, Laura. So at the age of 13, Roche dropped out of school, and it seems that this is around the same time that he began reading the Old Testament.
Oh.
And this contributed to, a sense of conviction that there would soon be a war between good and evil, which would lead to the apocalypse.
Yeah, the Old Testament's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Pretty rough.
It's pretty brutal. He seems to have gotten some of his focus on religion from not only growing up in the Catholic Church and attending mass with his family, but also because his father was reported to be a member of an ultra-conservative fascist Catholic fringe group known as the White Berets.
Fascist.
Yeah.
Fascist. Ultra-conservative. Anytime they use some kind of, like, descriptor in front of an already used one for, like,
yes.
No, we're just ultra-conservative. What the fuck does that mean?
Don't try to mince words here. We all know what this is. And so the White Berets can be best described as a largely paranoid and oppositional response to the increasingly liberal trends that many believed were threatening the traditions and teachings of the church.
Hmm. Okay, so they're like coming in defense of the Catholic religion.
Yes, they are worried because
they feel like
the Catholic Church, which we all know is super liberal and progressive, is becoming too liberal and progressive.
Ooh, so these are like, oof, yeah, like far, far, far that direction.
I believe so.
Okay, all right.
Although he grew up with religion, so it's funny because Roche was described as a ladies' man in his teenage years.
I cannot picture that, but okay.
Yeah, he would eventually marry a young woman named Francine Grenier in November 1967, and he was about 20 years old at the time of his marriage.
Okay.
He early on demanded that his wife dress a certain way when they were out in public. Ooh. So
red flag, ladies. Red flag.
Big red flag. She had to wear long dresses, remain covered up.
Mm.
But he strangely changed his mind after a few years and started letting her wear miniskirts.
First of all, letting her do anything, just, but, you know, it's sure. The times. But, like, why? That's weird. Most people I know who have ever, like, been that way don't ever just immediately change and they're like, dress like a woman of the night.
Well, yeah, to that extreme.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
It's weird.
Things progressively get more and more bizarre with this guy. So there are even reports that he asked his in-laws if he could form a nudist camp on their land. And they, of course, refused. They refused his request.
So so we're both married. Could you imagine going to your in-laws and being like, hey, do you mind if I set up a nudist camp here? Is that cool? And I couldn't imagine CJ asking my parents. My parents would be like, no. And Laura, divorce? Yes. What's going on?
Laura, what the fuck is wrong with your husband? Man, so I can't imagine what that would be like. Mm-hmm. I think my mom would laugh nervously and wouldn't know how to respond. And I think my dad would just shake his head and walk out of the room.
He'd be like, I'm not doing this.
I'm not tolerating this. I can't compute. Cannot compute.
Control Alt Delete. I'll see you later.
Goodbye. So Roche's behavior, like I said, started growing increasingly bizarre over the next few years.
Okay.
And it's lining up around the time that he had to undergo surgery for a stomach condition.
Okay. Interesting.
This will also come into play later on too.
Hmm.
So there are reports that Roche was dealing with pain from stomach ulcers and that as a result of his surgery, he would go on to experience digestive issues and chronic pain for the remainder of his life. So he had the stomach ulcers. He had surgery to correct them, and the surgery resulted in lasting pain and digestive issues. So it didn't work.
Now, speaking from experience, stomach ulcers are extremely painful.
Yes.
It is not a pleasant feeling. It is basically your stomach just eating itself.
Yeah.
And, I could imagine how that would be a not great thing to deal with on a daily basis.
Well, absolutely. If you're hoping to be healed or at least treated for this painful condition. And
yeah, it's because you went under the surgery.
The treatment results in more pain. So, and this occurred when he was just 23 years old.
Ugh, man.
Very young.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, the experience culminated in a growing interest in and fascination with medicine and healing.
Okay.
And he became obsessed with reading medical textbooks and would even go as far as to start lecturing his friends about medical facts and human anatomy.
Okay, so here's when he should have been like, I'm going to go to school to be a doctor.
Yes.
And that would have been the normal reaction.
Yeah.
Not, I'm going to tell my friends medical. This to me feels like people who use WebMD.
Oh, yeah. People are just doing like a Google search on symptoms.
Yeah, like a Google search. And they're like, well, did you know? And I'm like, please stop reading the internet. You're not a doctor.
Yeah. You are not a doctor.
Yeah. He should have gone to school.
Yes.
School would have been a good idea.
Something. But he did not. And again, all this will come back into the picture later on.
Mm-hmm.
So around this same time, he joined a club known as the Aramis Club, which is a Catholic organization that engages in philanthropic endeavors such as fundraising for charity.
Okay.
His time with the group, however, was short-lived as he tried to assume more of a leadership role that was unsupported by other members.
Okay, so he tried to infiltrate and take over.
Yes, he tried to move up the ranks, and the reason he was not supported seems to be his bizarre and perhaps even occultish ideas.
Okay, so when you're dealing with the occult and Catholicism, they don't like that shit.
No, they only like it if they can perform an exorcism and
exorcisms is the only
deny that they ever did it.
Right, exactly. But like when it comes to like, hey, Judy's practicing Satanism in her basement, freak the fuck out. And that's how people get hung or burned at the stake.
Oh man, yeah. Well, so the thing that seemed pretty occultish to me, he proposed that new members of the club wear the image of Satan on their backs. So yeah, that's what the Catholics want. They want t-shirts with Satan on the back and Jesus on the front.
Could you imagine walking into a Catholic church, even like today, yeah, and walking in and being like, I want to change our thing where everybody has to wear the devil on their back? They'd be like, first of all, no.
Yeah.
And second of all, you might, you know, be getting exercised later when they come to your house.
We're going to just like dunk you in holy water and...
Especially in the Bible Belt, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary down here.
Yeah, there's not a lot you can do to protect yourself once you've mentioned Satan.
So. Exactly.
So he parts ways with the Aramis Club and proclaims that he is converting to the Seventh-day Adventist Church and leaving behind his Catholic roots.
Okay. Now, remind me, what is the Seventh-day Adventist Church?
They're still a Christian organization.
Oh, okay.
And they're just a religious group.
Okay. So it's just a Christian thing, not like
As much as I know about it, I don't want to misspeak, but the Adventists have a lot of teachings about abstinence, so abstain from drugs, alcohol, tobacco, and abstain from unhealthy food.
Gotcha. Okay, because so kind of like Mormonism, where they're not allowed to drink like caffeine and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there are some links there between the two groups. And this is what seems to have appealed to Roche, was their teachings about abstinence as well as their views on the significance of men in religion. I think that men hold a pretty important place.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Surprise. Woo, shock. So this was appealing to Roche. And so I found that information about like the significance of men in religion. And I found that in multiple sources when I was looking. But when I looked, like I pulled up the website for the Adventist Church and I couldn't find anything that specifically is like pointing to men as super unique.
Huh.
I looked up their beliefs. I kind of looked through different guidelines for like being a man in the church. And it, to me, it just sounds pretty similar to any of the other churches I've been in and kind of the Bible putting men a little higher up.
True. But this is around the years of when? In the 70s?
Yeah, the 1977.
Okay, so, you know, the church may have not have had the same doctrine.
That's a good point. Things may have changed with the times
a little
bit. It may
have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe back then, like, men in their church, that was really important back then,
okay.
But maybe not today.
Yeah, maybe not as much. Maybe
they might have deleted that from their history.
Yeah, these are those liberal teachings that one, you know, the White Berets were worried about, Laura, his women gaining a little bit more equality in the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like earlier, when he had pretty much been kicked out of the Aramis Club, he pulls some bizarre crap again, and this big ego he had, his bizarre behaviors, alienate him from other members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they sever ties with Roche.
Okay.
So again, trying to get up in leadership.
So he's just not fitting in everywhere. And he's too ambitious. Like, he's too greedy.
He's just too bizarre. He's too crazy.
Yeah.
So he, of course, is undaunted, unfazed by this, and he decides to start his own religious following. And the way he begins this journey is he forms a medical clinic.
Okay.
And begins dispensing alternative treatments, including a supposed cure for leukemia.
Oh, okay.
Can you guess what do you think the cure is?
Okay, 70s. God, I don't know, like hemp?
No, just grape juice.
Shut the fuck up.
Mm-mm, just grape juice.
Shut the fuck up. Who met this man? And he was like, I can cure you with grape juice. Do you know how much grape juice I've like had in my life? And I have.
We'd all be drinking grape juice.
I have so many medical problems.
Yeah.
And I've drank grape juice, okay? So, although I guess the one thing I don't have is leukemia. So maybe yeah, well, it is the cure.
That's what's wrong. You haven't used it for leukemia.
Jesus. And people like, are like, yeah, yeah, totally.
Yes. I mean, he goes on to form a reputation as a spiritual healer among his female followers.
Gross.
Yeah. So by 1977, he and his little commune, which included women as well as men by now, quit their jobs and formed the group that would come to be known as the Anthill Kids. And they were named the Anthill Kids. They kind of took on that name based on their work ethic and close-knit living.
I hate it when adults use, like, kids in their title of their group. Like, we're the Anthill Kids. You're not kids. You're the Anthill Weirdos.
Yeah. We're the Beehive Children. We're the Beehive
it's
Children.
Like, stop with the kids stuff.
Yeah, you're not kids. Quit acting like a bunch of maniacs. And again, he ended up marrying one of his devout female followers. I had already mentioned that. And it was summer of 1978, and Roche believed he was a full-blown messiah at this point, claiming that he was receiving messages from God, who conveniently alerted him to the date that the world would end from a shower of boulder-like hailstones. So that sounds like meteors.
Boulder-like hailstones.
Yeah, so meteor.
Do you care to elaborate, sir?
No.
No.
Boulders. God.
I mean, or he could literally mean hailstones the size of boulders, I guess.
No, I mean, he could.
Because there are, you know, softball-sized hailstones, and it can kill you.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It can kill you. But all over the world.
It can be pretty
like,
bad.
It starts snowing and, like, everywhere. Here's some hailstones.
God, that'd be... I do wonder if I need a fallout shelter at some point. Don't have that. Don't have a basement.
I mean, after this whole pandemic craziness, I think everyone is going to be a doomsday prepper. I mean, I know I'm going to keep some supplies in my basement now.
Yeah, it's going to be a pandemic prepper.
Yeah.
Everyone's lost their damn minds prepper, but...
I feel like it's necessary, as we've seen that we were not prepared.
Yeah. Well, and so the date that he proclaimed the world was going to end was February 17th, 1979. And, okay. You know, that's just 3 days after Valentine's Day. So I blame Hallmark for that one.
I've seen too many damn Valentine's Day cards, and I'm single. Fuck everyone. The world's going to end 3 days after Valentine's Day. I hope all you couples burn.
Yeah. Can't have love, no one. Can just everyone dies.
That's what it sounds like to me.
It sounds that way. And by this point, Roche had amassed around 17 followers, not
oh,
a huge
wow.
following, but this included 9 women, 4 men, and 4 children.
Mm.
Yep. But don't worry, everyone. His lack of child followers is soon going to grow exponentially because, as we all know, male cult leaders are all about that. We need to have sex to repopulate the earth. And, oh, yeah, I'm the only one who gets the sex because God and stuff.
I mean, that's basically the thinking.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how it would sound to me if somebody was trying to explain to me why they were the only person who had sex and why they were having sex with children.
Yes.
And this is a close to God, repopulate the earth. And I'm like, the earth's pretty populated. Yeah, can we wait until after the bombs and stuff?
We're doing pretty good, and maybe not have a bunch of infants around for the hailstones that are larger than them.
It's always like a sexual thing. You know what I mean?
It's always about sex.
It's always there. It may not be like about, but it's in there.
And it's...
What is that, like a cult leader perk or something?
Well, it's only male cult leaders. Like, there aren't that many cults run by women. I think I've heard of like one or two, but I don't know that it comes back to sex as much, if at all.
Well, and we know from like, you know, psychology and stuff like that, male criminals are usually more motivated by sex and stuff like that than women. Women are usually like, I'm gonna kill you because of like revenge or something
well,
like that.
And sex can be used as a means of power and control.
Right.
So I think that factors into it as well.
Right.
But So, gross. Fearing the end of the world, yeah, fearing that the world is going to end and having been promised safety by their leader, the group made their way to a remote valley town in Quebec. Okay. So, in the Gaspé Peninsula of Quebec.
Oh, yes.
Gaspé. They named their retreat Eternal Mountain.
Of course.
And as with many, and perhaps all, cults, the fun-loving times and sense of increased freedom was gone now that the group was secluded, and Roche's control would only increase from here.
Yeah, that's often when it turns really, really bad, is when you actually make, like, a commune that is separated from society.
Isolating everyone.
Yeah, and then, like, that's when the times when they start, like, amassing, like, weapons and, like, turning into, like, a militia and not so much, like...
Not so much just the gardening kind of stuff anymore.
It's not a free roam. It's not what you thought it was often, because most cult leaders are not actually trying to do something good.
No, they are not so much...
They want the control, they want the power, mm-hmm. and the gross shit that comes with this.
Yeah, and they think that they have all the answers, and so mm-hmm. anything that comes to mind, must be a message from God.
And of course, you could always be dealing with, like, mental illness, too.
Absolutely. Like,
there could be some kind of, you know, because this happened some time ago, there's no way for us to tell.
Yeah. Schizophrenia, like, any
number of them.
Potentially not well-treated or managed. Yeah. So he started increasing his amount of control over the group, and he began by forbidding his followers from having any contact with family.
Naturally, that's always, like, step number one.
Yeah, it seems to be, we could write a handbook on how to form a cult.
You really could. Probably. I mean, at this point, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, there's some definite steps you need to take. So his next step was to take away their names and assign biblical names to his followers.
Oh, no.
Yes, and guess what name he took for himself?
God.
No, somehow not God. He took Moses.
Close. Okay.
He also took the common step of preparing his followers for his twisted requests and largely inhumane tests of their faith by explaining that God told him that his followers would be challenged by hardships and suffering on their path to heaven.
I feel like that is always another part of religion, is why is there always suffering?
A lot of suffering.
I don't understand the relation to suffering to God. You know what I mean?
I think it all comes back to a test of faith, and I don't know exactly why.
Yeah,
you can't just live a decent life and not fuck with people,
like,
and that be kind of.
I mean, like, because at this point, like, we all know, like, I'm an atheist, so I don't really believe in anything.
Yeah,
but, like, if I were to believe in something, if there was a God that's controlling all of this, to me, he wouldn't be some asshole that's like,
exactly,
that's like,
exactly,
fuck you, you been believing me or die. Like, I feel like everyone would go to heaven except for people who actually did, like, really shitty shit, you know?
Sure.
It wouldn't have to do with faith. Why else give people free will?
Exactly. Why would we even have that as an option if it's
right
not supposed to be used and utilized? Well, and that was the problem I've always had. So I do consider myself Christian, but I'm one of these people that grew up Christian and had to come to a point of making my own sense of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously, well, maybe not obviously, I believe in science. I believe in medicine.
Well, yeah, and you are a doctor.
Yeah, and I don't believe a lot of the things that we have been using Christianity and religion for are what it was supposed to be used for.
Right.
Like,
right.
I think it's gotten bastardized. I think that people have corrupted it. And
100%.
I just think you have to form your own kind of guidelines from what you believe to be true.
Yeah.
And
I see. In my mind, it's just be a good person. Don't be a fucking asshole.
And that's pretty much how I feel about it.
Ta-da.
Don't be an asshole.
In my mind, then, if there is an afterlife, you'll get to go to the good place.
Exactly.
Also, I don't understand why the devil would be torturing people who are, like, atheists and stuff like that, because he went against God, and then everybody in hell is going against God. It should be, like, a big freaking party.
Well, you would think that they'd all just be getting along down there, and, like,
like, it'd be pretty chill.
You know, they think that we torture people down here, right? And they're just all sitting around drinking
wine. Yeah, they're just perpetuating rumors.
Yeah, just like
he's like, hey, go up there as a ghost and tell him you're suffering in hell, burning for eternity.
yeah, go possess this woman and act all crazy. Yeah, it's all just a front. Now, with everything going on with Anthill Kids, let's keep in mind that this is all taking place on the heels of the Jonestown Massacre.
Yes, which sneak peek. That will be the next episode, or the one that came before this, depending on when we release this.
When we release stuff. And again, so that mass suicide taking place in November 1978. So this is forming like a year before that and continuing on for another 12 years. So within a year of moving the group to Eternal Mountain, Roche's true depravity, and lack of toeing the line in terms of his teachings came to light. He had developed a drinking problem, despite the fact that he forbade his followers from indulging in alcohol or drugs, and despite the fact that the Seventh-day Adventists are against alcohol, drugs, and unhealthy foods.
The cult leader is always a hypocrite.
Yeah, I mean, always a
hypocrite, and there's always substance abuse involved.
Well, I was curious what, like, the unhealthy foods means exactly. Like, Twinkies, hot dogs? Like, what are they talking about?
It's probably just whatever he didn't like.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Like, I think Brussels sprouts are gross, so that's unhealthy.
Well, he's like telling everyone they can't eat like hamburgers and fries, and he's like, you know, slamming beers and like sucking down Big Macs or something.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous.
And things got so strict that members weren't even allowed to speak to one another unless Roche was present.
What?
Yeah. So it got to that point with his, you know, level of control over the group.
Crazy level of control.
Oh, he's got to be able to censor them. He has to be able to censor them and just exert that crazy control he has.
Damn, how do you think, like, how are you in there and you're like, wait, I can't talk to, what?
I can't talk to Sheila. Like,
that's just paranoia.
Well, so it's like Roche is in there like, Sheila wants to tell you, Jim, that she is having, like, is he the go-between? Is he the mediator for everybody at this point?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. And as his drinking increased, so did his tendency for violent outbursts.
Naturally, that kind of comes along with alcoholism.
Exactly. He started by assaulting the adults, and it soon became clear that the children were not safe from these attacks either. So he would back up his abuse of the children by saying that the devil needed to be beaten out of the children when they were disobedient.
Now, that is not something I haven't heard before.
Yeah. Yes.
Like having the devil beat out of you.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that that's not like an uncommon
sentiment.
Thought of upbringing children like back then.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I gotta beat the devil out of them.
I think it's pretty common, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So these drunken rages, assaults on other members, and restricted communication were only the tip of the iceberg for his violence. If a member complained or attempted to flee, they would be punished by Roche, and these punishments included being hit with belts and hammers, suspending people from the ceiling.
Okay, now you're just getting weird, dude.
And defecating on members.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he even forced members to eat their own feces on several occasions and to break their own legs with sledgehammers.
What the fuck?
Yes. So it seems like he was kind of obsessed with poop and violence.
Oh, my God. Things like this blow my mind. They really do. They kind of make me, like, shut down. Like, I'm like, how did nobody realize that this isn't okay?
It's like the battered wife syndrome.
Yeah.
It becomes part of that whole battered wife syndrome. He had their love. He had their admiration. He had their trust. And then slowly started to enact all of these different measures. These
like,
forms of control.
Things, whatever he enjoys. Like, these could be sexually motivated. You don't know.
It's just his sadistic whims, but because I think he gradually introduced them at first, and then he explained them away with religion, people are willing to tolerate.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, and these people were probably, you know, desperate or just...
Well, they had no one on the outside to give them kind of a reality check and let them know this isn't okay.
He's already cut off the family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, remember that whole end of days thing?
Mm-hmm.
So February, February 17th, 1979 came and went and nothing happened.
This is always how it happens when somebody predicts, like,
the end of the world.
There was a priest or something back a while ago. I can't really remember the details, but he was like, oh, the world's gonna end, and then it didn't, and then he keeps changing the date that the world is gonna end.
Yes.
And people are like, oh, is it today? It's like, no, it's not today, because nobody can tell.
Well, so it's funny, because this is kind of, I think, how things went with Roche. He chalked it up to heaven and God just being on a different different timeline. That was his reasoning.
Oh, you know, they didn't synchronize their watches properly, yeah. So we've just got a little delay. Don't worry, the end of the world's still coming.
So he does seem to have kind of moved on from the end of the world focus. I think that that could have been a backdrop kind of thing where he kept mentioning that it was going to happen, but it doesn't factor in much to the rest of
it. Well, it was a scare tactic that then became useless because this went on longer than his projected end date.
Yes. So Roche was known to become angry and enraged at the drop of a hat, and this seems to have been fueled largely by his megalomania and increasing levels of paranoia.
Yeah, so you have a guy who's, like, in complete control of these people, and then knows that he's doing a bad thing.
Exactly, and remember, like, remember all the medical stuff he was researching?
Oh, no!
So when he was angry, for whatever reason, he also began performing surgery on his followers, as he believed himself to be a medical expert and healer.
That's worse than faith healing.
This even happened in cases when surgery wasn't even warranted.
Well, of course it did, because he's crazy.
Yeah, well, and like he would know when it's warranted, I guess. Members lost toes, teeth, fingers, and even limbs to his surgical limbs.
Oh my god, these people are going through some shit.
Yes. Unsurprisingly, members were maimed and left dead in some cases.
Of course they were. Now, is the colony growing, like, with children?
It is, and so...
Okay.
The children, again, were not, you know, they weren't considered special or removed from any of this. So a 2-year-old boy named Samuel was killed after Roche performed a botched circumcision on the young boy, using only a kitchen knife and pure ethanol to help anesthetize the child.
That's disgusting.
It's terrible. He was
painful. And 2 years old?
2 years old. And he was prompted to perform the surgery because the boy had difficulty urinating. And this was likely due to him having been badly beaten after being left under the supervision by a male member, Guy Vier, who was described as a mentally deficient young man.
So he abused that child, and then that child had problems, and then this fucking sicko
is like,
decided to, like, oh, I'll give you a circumcision, we'll help you be able to pee.
Yeah, I'm gonna fix it with the fucking kitchen knife. Yes. And Roche did believe that Vier needed to be punished for beating the child, because, you know, he's the only one that can beat people, I guess.
Of course. Duh.
So he decided to castrate Vier and remove both of his testicles.
Oh, God.
The death of the child did eventually prompt an investigation by the police, who did not believe the story that Roche had concocted. And he had told members to tell everyone that Samuel had been trampled to death by a horse. So he was arrested, but he only spent 18 months in jail.
Oh, okay. So he's been arrested and he's away from his group for 18 months.
He is, but he didn't lose a lot of members. Somehow in that time, I think he retained followers.
Of course he did, because, you know.
Yeah, apparently it takes more than a year and 6 months for people to
let it go.
Get over Stockholm Syndrome. So he was released in 1984, and upon his release, he chose to flee his parole order in Quebec and relocated his followers to Burnt River, Ontario on 200 acres of land.
Okay, so we're starting a new commune.
Yes, and his female followers were bearing him children. 9 of them had pretty much become his concubines, and they bore him a total of 26 children.
Jesus.
And they were to be his wives exclusively, even if they were already partnered or legally married.
Oh, so you have, like, couples who are coming into this cult, and he's like, I'm taking your wife.
Yep.
Mr. Steal your girl?
She's mine now. And I don't know what his wife thinks about all this, but...
I mean, what does anybody think? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, he's...
She's not allowed to think.
Well, and he may be very, charismatic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So. Somehow, between cutting dicks off and beating the shit out of you, he's charismatic.
Exactly. So. There's something there that's, you know...
Appealing to these people,
yeah.
So he was said to have physically and sexually abused his children.
Of course.
But thankfully, in many cases, the welfare authorities in Canada would come and remove children from the home because of the abuse.
Okay, so you're taking out children, but more children are being born and more children are being abused, and we're not doing anything about it.
It doesn't seem that way. Over the years, 23 children ended up being removed from the community. Around the time of 1987, 21 of the children had become official wards of the crown.
So now you have 21 orphans.
Pretty much. They are in the system.
Who have been abused. And who probably have severe
trauma,
like, mental and emotional trauma.
Absolutely. Need all kinds of counseling. Great. And
I'm sure they didn't get it.
Well, and everything just to be consistent. I don't know. This is Canada. They might
have. Oh, that's true. That's true. Go Canada.
They might do a better job than we do.
Well, hopefully.
Well, so while all of this shit is already pretty gruesome and terrifying, his most famous surgical debacle that would ultimately result in his capture involved a female member named Solange Boyard, who was 32 years old.
Okay.
On September 28th, 1988, Solange was complaining of pain in her abdomen. So the all-powerful, medically untrained Roche decided his surgical services were needed yet again.
Of course.
I don't know why people didn't learn to quit complaining about pain.
Right? Do not tell this man. Be like, you fucking, like, cut off a finger or something. Be like, hide it behind your back. I'm fine.
He does not need to know of any medical issues because
tell him shit.
He's going to try to treat them.
Yeah.
So to help cure Solange, he proceeded to forcefully administer an olive oil and molasses enema.
Ew.
He secured her to ties with a makeshift table and began punching her in the stomach.
That's not a medical technique at all.
For stomach pain, he's going to punch her in the stomach.
I'll fix it. She's got to break it up.
Yes. And he was not satisfied with the results, so he grabbed his trusty kitchen knife, which is the choice of all home surgeons, of course.
Naturally.
And
scalpel, please, bitch.
Scalpel, butter knife. And cut open Solange's abdomen, and then he tore out part of her intestines with his bare hands.
Why?
Because he...
It's not how you fix things!
Because surgery, okay. Laura, surgery.
He's not, no. He's just playing with these people now. Like, he's just playing with their bodies at this point. Like, he's not actually trying to fix anything. There's no way that he thinks that that is going to help her stomach pain. She's going to die.
He either doesn't care or he is that fucked up that he believes...
He's just fucking with him.
He knows what he's doing. I mean, he read all those medical textbooks.
I can promise you, in no medical textbook anywhere does it ever say to pull out somebody's intestines with your bare fucking hands.
Rip them out. They don't need those. So while all of this shit was going on, other members had inserted some kind of plastic tube into Solange's throat and were just blowing air into it.
Oh.
So that was something else he ordered them to do.
They do realize that, like, there's...
I guess they're giving her air or oxygen.
There's a certain way. Yeah, but there's a certain way. Intubating is not a, like just a put a tube down and try to work. Like... It's not just easy like that. That's why it's, you know, trained.
So he ordered another follower to stitch her up after he was done playing with her guts. And it took Solange a whole day to pass away.
Oh, man. Of internal bleeding, probably. Yes.
Well, it actually, it was, I'm sure that was some of it, but it was also later determined by actual medical doctors that this was due to her stomach acid emptying into her abdominal cavity.
Oh, no. Oh, God. So her stomach acid is just eating her other organs.
Pretty much.
That is a horrible way to die.
And you would hope this was the end of the story with Solange.
But of course it's not.
Oh, it's not. He wasn't done with this woman. So she was dead, obviously.
Yeah.
But this did not stop him from continuing to experiment on her body.
Right.
And he proclaimed to his followers that he also possessed the power of resurrection.
Of course he did.
And how do you resurrect a dead lady with half of her stomach ripped out?
Well, and, you know, the rest of her fucking organs melted by acid.
Melted by stomach acid.
I can make zombies. Watch.
Yeah. So the answer to how you resurrect a dead lady with half of her stomach ripped out is you use semen and lots of it.
Oh, God.
Yes. So first, Roche drilled a hole into Solange's skull, and I'm assuming he was just masturbating, but... Could be worse. So he proceeded to masturbate until he reached climax, and then ejaculated into the hole.
This man is a sick fuck.
He is. And so, you know, he realized there was no way this was enough semen to get the job done. So he then commanded several of his male followers to do the same.
Oh my God!
But Solange did not wake up.
Well, no shit.
Yeah, so somehow the power of semen failed here.
Power of semen.
Members buried her now even more defiled corpse on the grounds of their compound.
Of course. I mean, gotta cover up the evidence.
Yes, and her body would remain undiscovered for a year, and it would ultimately be the torture and maiming of another follower during one of Rocha's surgeries that would lead to Solange's discovery.
So this went, like, this just happened and went on undiscovered for a year.
Yes. And only a month after members had cremated and buried Solange's remains, Roche set his sights on Gabrielle Lavallee, who had complained of a toothache.
Jeez. Now again. Stop complaining.
Yes. I think that the whole trick to surviving this cold is never to let anyone know you're in pain or discomfort.
Right. You'd cough and he'd be like, do you need to take your lung out? No.
No. No. I need that.
I need to leave. I need to go home.
When she complained of a tooth, he ripped out 8 of her teeth.
Of course, you know, I mean, when one's rotten, they're all rotten.
Somehow not having learned the lesson of you don't let this guy know when you're in pain, in July of 1989, Gabrielle complained of stiffness in one of her fingers, and
he just cut it off.
Roche is coming to the rescue. He actually went further, so he impaled Gabrielle's entire right hand to a wooden table with a hunting knife.
Fuck!
And so her whole arm turns blue and getting dark.
Well, yeah, because she's losing blood. She's going to die.
So this, of course, means it's time to operate.
This man is just like playing with Barbie dolls at this point. Like, he's like, I'm going to play doctor.
Time to play doctor. I'm wondering what he was like as a kid, if he did do any operations on animals first.
Oh, first. You know he did. You know he did.
So again, he decides that it's time to operate and that he's going to need to remove the entire arm.
Naturally.
And relying once again on his trusty kitchen utensils, he grabs a meat cleaver and with no antiseptic and zero medical training, he cut off her arm somewhere between the shoulder and elbow. And it took 2 full whacks because the blade was dull.
No! Ugh.
And Gabrielle was eventually stitched up after spending hours in pain just writhing on the floor. And Roche decided to cauterize the wound with another trusty piece of medical equipment, the drive shaft from a truck that had been heated with a torch.
What's a drive shaft? What a random fucking thing.
I don't know where he's coming up with this shit.
Also, a drive shaft is large. Like, couldn't you just, like, heat up a spatula or something?
I mean, it'd be easier just to carry her over to the drive shaft.
Or just, you know, fucking cauterize it with the torch.
Yeah. Well, so, and this isn't even the entire story of the torture Gabrielle had endured during her time with Roche. There are reports that she had also had blow torches held to her genitals.
Because that's a treatment for anything.
Yes, and this one's for you, Laura. Had suffered from a hypodermic needle breaking off in her spine.
Fuck you.
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Even having parts of her breasts amputated.
And, that's also for me.
Okay. And her head smashed in with an axe. Somehow she survived that? I'm not sure about that one.
This bitch is brutal!
And she finally fled and contacted the authorities, I think after he smashed her head in with an axe. That was the story I read.
Holy fuck!
Yep. So, we're thankfully coming to the end of our story here.
Oh, good. There's not more. Good.
There's probably more, but,
Well, you know, there's always the stuff that, you know, is undiscovered and they never admitted to, so you don't want to know.
You don't want to know that one. So, Roche was charged with assault and sentenced to 12 years imprisonment. And during his imprisonment, his group disbanded and an unknown former group member snitched and told the authorities about the body of Solange. So, that's how they eventually found her.
So you're telling me that he only got sentenced to 12 years imprisonment for all of the torture that he put these people through?
Only 12 years for the torture because, you know, again, they didn't know about Solange's body. But thankfully, he was tried for her murder and was sentenced to life in prison for second-degree murder.
Second degree?
Yeah.
Doesn't that mean that you didn't do it intentionally?
Well...
Or no, that's third degree, I think.
I think second degree was maybe you didn't plan to.
Yeah, because first degree is premeditation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so he was sentenced to life in 1993, and he would remain in prison until 2011 when he was found dead in his cell on February 26th.
Good bitch.
Well, and it's believed, so this part's great, it's believed that he died at the hands of his cellmate, Matthew McDonald, who is alleged to have stabbed Roche in the neck with a shiv. So he shanked him with a shiv.
Shanked him with a shiv!
Shanked him with a shiv, then calmly walked over to the guard station, handed over his shiv, and stated, "That piece of shit's down on the range. I've sliced him up."
I like this man. I don't know what this man's in jail for, but you murder. Go, buddy.
He's in there for murder.
He's in there for murder?
Yeah.
Good on him, man. I mean, you've already murdered one person. You might as well murder this piece of shit.
Yep. So Roche was dead at 63 years old.
Good. Sucker.
I just like that quote, that piece of shit's down on the range.
It's down on the range. I've sliced him up.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine the guard who's now holding this bloody shiv and is like, oh, God.
I'm imagining, like, Billy Bob Thornton's voice from Sling Blade, like, coming over.
Also, can we make a t-shirt that says shanked him with a shiv?
Shanked him with a shiv. We need to.
Shanked him with a shiv.
Shanked him with a shiv.
That's our new, that's our quote of the week, is shanked him with a shiv.
Yeah, so.
I feel like that's how I'd kill somebody. I would definitely shank somebody with a shiv.
Yes. Man. Well, so,
oh, man. Wow.
That's the Anthill Kids.
No, I had never heard of this cult. I had never heard of this.
It's pretty crazy stuff.
But it's interesting that it's not more, like, noted. Because, like I said, you know, I have a lot of books about, like, serial killers and cults and stuff like this, and I haven't read about this one.
Yes, I don't know why it's not more popular, just considering everything that went on. And I wonder if it's just because it's based out of Canada.
Probably.
I mean,
probably
that could be.
People don't really think outside of their scope most of the time. So if it's not happening in your country, then it's not happening.
I don't think of Canada as being as fucked up of a country as I do like the U.S. and some of these other places.
I know when you say Canadian cult, I'm like, oh, they must be really nice. They're like, oh, sorry. They just don't say sorry.
That's their like biggest thing is they just never say sorry. So that's how you form a cult in Canada that's risque. So, yeah. Well, and for this whole, the segment for animals or assholes, I'm going to do a quick one because I know this has been a long one.
Tell me who's an asshole today.
But this one seemed pretty relevant given the, I guess, shenanigans that could have ensued if this had happened with Solange's remains or anyone else's remains they buried on the grounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no telling.
There was a report in the everythinglubbock.com news.
Okay.
And this is Lubbock, Texas, and I am going to give a shout out to Marcus Parks. He's one of the hosts of my favorite podcast, The Last Podcast on the Left, and he's a Lubbock native.
Nice.
So he talks about that a lot. But so the title of the article is Prairie Dogs Dig Up Buried Remains at City of Lubbock Cemetery. And this was posted on June 23rd, 2020, this year. And the report is that over the Father's Day weekend, Prairie Dogs dug up the buried remains of deceased individuals. So I guess multiple.
Oh, not just one.
Yeah, they were busy. They were busy at the City of Lubbock Cemetery, and that pictures of the exposed remains were posted to Facebook by Carmisha Ward.
I didn't
look that part up. I wasn't sure I wanted to see that. So pictures of the remains that had been dug up were posted by Carmisha Ward. She probably had no clue the hell was going on.
But it was at a cemetery.
Yes. A community activist, Phyllis Gantt, said that Ward's family saw the bones when they were visiting their grandfather's grave.
Oh, so they, like, dug them up and left them?
I guess they were like, oh, we don't want this shit. They just left it there.
Hilarious. I think of the prairie dogs being like, watch us scare the fuck out of these. Watch.
Well, so in Phyllis Gantt, she was saying, you know, this shouldn't happen anywhere in America. Her brother and father are also buried in that cemetery. And she believes many of the people laid to rest in the city-owned cemetery are not all treated equally.
Mm-hmm.
And another man, Gordon Harris, his grandparents are buried in the city cemetery, said his family has complained to the city about the prairie dog issue for over 2 years.
So it's not uncommon. They come there all the time, dig up bones. That's weird. I didn't know that was a... Is that like a problem that many cemeteries face, or is this just this one instance?
I've never heard of it, but apparently in Lubbock, you got some fucking cadaver-loving prairie dogs.
I feel like grave diggers have a lot of secrets, so there's no telling what actually happens on a cemetery. I bet you grave diggers, you go talk to a grave digger, I bet you he's got some stories to tell you.
So they're saying that they're worried that the caretaking that's supposed to happen isn't happening the way it should, otherwise this wouldn't be going on.
Right.
But I don't know. So the city also, there's like a statement from the city of Lubbock, and it says, the city identified and returned the remains to their resting place. The city is working to relieve the area in and around the cemetery of the prairie dog population. So I don't like the sound of that.
So a culling? They're going to cull the prairie dogs? Is that what they're doing?
I guess. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'd be horrified and probably pretty upset if I went to the cemetery to visit a family member and their bones were scattered everywhere because a little fucking prairie dog dug it up.
Yeah, but rehome them.
Yeah, just move them.
Move them.
Humane traps and move them. Yeah. It's not that hard.
There you go.
You can do that.
That's it.
You don't have to go killing things. But
yeah, it's not their fault that, you know, human bones have tasty meat on them.
Little, you know, medical examiners, maybe. They're training. We don't know. We don't know the story.
Yeah. Maybe they're going to take over the world. You don't know.
It'd be better off this point.
Oh, yeah. Sad panda.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Lubbock.
All right.
Prairie dogs in Lubbock.
Nice. The world is going to shit, y'all.
Yeah, it's headed that way.
Weird stuff is happening.
All over the place.
All right. Well, that was our episode for today.
Yeah, thank you guys for joining us.
Check us out. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, any other social medias you can think of. Probably not. We're not on Snapchat.
Yeah, no Snapchat, no Tumblr. No Snapchat.
We're too old.
Yeah, I'm too old for that shit. Yeah, tell us what you guys think. Drop us a line. Give us some feedback.
And follow along with us, because we're going to start doing some cool stuff on social media along with the podcast. So we'll see you next time.
Bye.